Welcome to segment 2 of episode 7 of LDS Women's Book Review. I'm Shanda, here with Sheila and Hillary for the second segment where we talk about Left Behind by, technically it's by Jerry B. Jenkins.
Yes, that bothers me. I read that back cover and went, why is Tim LaHaye getting all the credit for this?
Exactly. It's written by, Mr. Jenkins.
He conceived the idea.
But Tim LaHaye did conceive the idea, so...
Because he's the minister. Yep. I think he provides...
He provided the
factual information.
Yes, the scriptures.
And Mr. Jenkins makes it...
Interesting.
Makes it into the book form. Okay, the summary of Left Behind is... The world is thrown into chaos and mourning when millions of people simply disappear in an instant, in what some people recognize as the rapture. Those left behind struggling to find answers fall prey to the charms of a man who rises in power claiming to want peace and to unify the world.
Sure is a charming man at first.
It doesn't last very long.
At least for the readers.
So this was written in third person from, I think, Rayford and Buck. Chloe never takes the lead
takes
in those.
The reins on
it's those third men. Person from the two leading men, Rayford Steele and Buck Williams.
Which, I can just say something. What was he thinking naming him Rayford?
Rayford?
It just sounds like he's a geek. I'm apologizing to anyone out there named Rayford, but I'm sorry. Had a hard time with that name.
Rayford. Well, I liked it when Hattie shortened it to Rafe, because...
Rafe is
okay. A little more...
Yeah. But we don't want to talk about Hattie.
And sometimes they call him Ray.
It drives me nuts.
But Rayford. They said
it's
a lot
under
Rayford.
Under your skin, and you just want to smack her.
Now, I warned, I just want to say,
yes, she loves
I have read this whole 12-book series before, and I absolutely loved it, and I warned both Hillary and Shanda that once you get started, you have to read all 12 books. That is just how it just sucks you in. You cannot just say, oh, that was a nice book. Oh, listen. No, you want to have book two ready once you finish book one.
Let me tell you this right now. Check out both book one and book two at the same time, because I read book one on a Saturday. Finished it and could not get to the library until Monday.
Oh, that's
so
awful.
I had to wait until Monday to go and get
which doesn't
book
sound
two.
Like a long time until you're reading this.
Yes,
exactly.
The first book, although I liked the first book better than the second book.
They're all different. They're all very
they
different.
They all have their different
they do.
Positive
and they will.
I think the reason why I like Left Behind is because even though, they talk about the rapture being behind it, it seems almost a little more sci-fi than religious.
A little
does
bit.
Does that make sense?
It does. Especially all the theories that get thrown out there with what really happened to them.
It's just such an
aliens.
Such an interesting concept. Mm. I mean, if you think, if they're, obviously we know the truth about the rapture as LDS women, but just as a concept itself, why are you laughing?
I don't know if I do know what the whole concept behind rapture
is. Well,
I'll
tell you the history because I have done some research on this.
Well, is it that one website that you sent me? Is
there's
that by
two.
An LDS person? One was LDS, one wasn't, right?
One
no.
was kind of LDS.
No,
neither of them were LDS.
They had
pictures of Greg Olson on there.
I know, that's why I saw
that.
I
went,
what is going on? Yeah,
I know, I got confused, too.
Because they believe in Christ and he paints Christ.
Oh,
I don't think
true.
He's
limited,
only LDS people can have Greg Olson.
So you have not really found a website that talks about it? You have?
I have.
Okay.
I read on it a lot because I don't remember the church ever talking about the rapture.
Really quick, before you go on that, because I know that that's going to be interesting and I don't want to interrupt you on that one. There is a book that I found actually at a clearance at the library, and it's called Watch and Be Ready, and it's a compilation of 10 or 15 different authors, and it's not specifically on the rapture, but it is on the second coming and the events leading up to
LDS?
And they are all LDS.
That sounds good.
And I am kicking myself for not bringing it with me because there was even a spot in there I bookmarked specifically for this and forgot it.
Do you remember what it said?
I don't, because it was about 3 weeks ago that I read it, this particular part. So, but I recommend to read that book. It is available at the library.
Watch and Be Ready?
Watch and Be Ready. It's and there's a bunch of other books. I mean, that's not the only one. That just happens to be the one that I have. Mm-hmm. That you can find information about the second coming. And then, of course, the good old scriptures.
And I mean, we've talked a lot in our church about the second
Doctrine
coming.
Doctrine and Covenants.
But we don't really talk about
the
rapture.
It's because it's not really
Let me give you a history of the rapture. In 1830, there was a young girl who claimed she had a vision in 1830 where she saw people going up into the clouds, flying through the sky, et cetera, et cetera. And What it boils down to is there are these two people, one of them I think his name was John Darby, something like that. They took that and ran with it. And it was not part of any doctrine of the church for the, you know, the Catholic, Christian, whatever, the right, Christian base right. up until then was not even considered part of. It was something that was adopted later on. And this one, the website I was telling you about, this Baptist minister who embraces the Book of Mormon.
Is that the BaptistBookofMormon.com one?
Well, of course, there are things where he talks about Joseph Smith writing the Book of Mormon, and we know that it was translated. Right. So there are a few things that, you know, still kind of bugged me a little bit. But it was really refreshing to see a Baptist minister who embraced the Book of Mormon. And embraced canon.
That is interesting.
You know, he talked about the subject of canon. You know, that right. until it was all gathered together into the Bible, there was no canon. You know, like because it was put into the Bible, the theory, the idea of the Bible being the only word of God on the earth and that's it, it came about basically because people compiled it and then that was it. And he thinks that, like we do, why wouldn't Revelation still come? You know, limiting it to the Bible is man's idea, not God's idea.
It is interesting hearing this from a Baptist.
It is.
It was very interesting. But he talks about the rapture a little bit. There's like a paragraph in there. And about the history of it. And he pointed out a coincidence I didn't know. That this girl, Mary, what's her face, had her vision in 1830.
Okay.
He brings out the fact that it just goes to show that when Christ put something on the earth and Satan has to match it.
Oh!
Exactly. So he talks about the restoration. Wow. You know, he embraces the restoration, basically.
And yes, he says in his own way.
Well,
I guess he interprets
it. It's his interpretation. Yeah. But, you know, he points out that the restoration occurred in 1830, the same year this lady had her little vision.
Oh,
and
man!
That's interesting, isn't it?
Just, and so, as far as LDS
yes,
doctrine goes, there is no rapture.
Okay.
As far as it is presented in Left Behind.
I am just so glad that I haven't been sleeping through church the last, you know.
They don't really talk about this.
You have to do your own research. I mean, this is not like a subject in gospel doctrine.
It's not taboo.
No, it's not taboo, but it's just not.
It's just
fully
not that important. It's really not that important.
Good.
Because, like you said earlier in the Christ Commission discussion, we have our personal testimonies that we need to get. That's the most important thing: the scriptures and the prophets. That is the most, you know, in our personal testimonies. Am I right?
Absolutely.
That is the most important thing, and naturally, that would make you be prepared for the second coming. No man knows when that's going to be, even though people try and predict.
Oh, I think that's hilarious.
As far
They're
as
so specific.
Exactly. But in Left Behind, as far as that rapture goes, it's not in line
with
LDS doctrine.
I don't like
LDS
their
doctrine.
Concept, how he does the rapture, though.
Apparently,
it's kind of hokey.
Apparently, there are three schools of thought on the rapture. There is pre-tribulation rapture, which is
right,
this.
Right.
There's mid-tribulation
rapture,
which would occur halfway between the however many years.
Exactly.
And there's post-tribulation rapture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another thing about this, the Left Behind, that is different than LDS doctrine is the seals. The seal judgment.
They're so interesting, though.
They are interesting.
But we are actually at the end of the sixth seal.
Which is funny
because
I know it's right around the corner.
The seventh seal, well, to me it's a relief because according to them, according to Mr. LaHaye and Mr. Jenkins, those people who were left behind had to go through everything. Well, 6,000 years have already passed according to LDS doctrine. We're in the end of the sixth seal. We don't have to live through this stuff. Like he says,
not
the people in
the
book.
Same way, perhaps.
Exactly.
Not
exactly.
Through the seal judgment.
Not through seal judgment.
Right, right.
I would not be surprised to see similar things like that happen within reason.
Well, we already know about the signs of the times.
Yes, because there are, the way I read it is I did see a couple of signs of the times in terms of a little more on a dramatic scale in here, but, you know, they kind of mirror what we're going through. And I thought that was fascinating, too, about the seals on that.
You know what I love most about this series? Because I do have this series listed as one of my favorites. This is my favorite books. I love books where there is clearly a good hero and evil. That's why I love Harry Potter. I love the good against the I love good versus evil. I love books like that.
I think that's why I like Lord of the Rings.
And I love Lord of the Rings too. I think I have that down also as some of my favorites.
Yeah, it's in mine.
You know, I just, I
don't like it when there's someone on that border.
Someone on the border.
You know, when they're not quite good, they're not quite evil, and you're just like, eh, I'm not trying to decide. Who you are.
But you know what? This series is so entertaining. You know what? It's very entertaining. That's what it's all about. Sure. It's well written. I think it's well written. I like the short little chapters.
Oh, they are nice.
You know, it's really cool because it was like last night I was reading Tribulation Force.
It wouldn't matter if there were short chapters or not. I get to page 200 before I even look at the page.
You read quickly.
I start reading and then I look down. I'm like 204. Well, wow, how'd that happen?
It is a fast read. It's a very quick, entertaining
read. Which is a nice contradiction to the Christ Committee.
Yes, and that's what I love about these.
Okay. This book is not Mormon doctrine.
No, not at all.
And what
not
we're saying is our opinion only.
Okay, that was very nice.
How's that for a disclaimer?
I mean, the thing is, I just like to read these books because it's nice to read of heroes that believe in Christ, that believe in God.
And they're battling evil, and even though they know they might lose their life.
And they're standing up for something, you know? Like President Hinckley is told, standing for something, you know? And that's what I've loved about these. And I know as it gets harder and harder as they go through all the books. And people that you love, that you've grown to love through the books, they will die. There's a lot of people that die in this 12 book series, you know, as they are standing up for Christ.
Well, there's one thing I can say about this series that it's done for me.
What's that?
And that is it's really inspired in me a desire to increase my knowledge of Scripture.
Like the last days?
The last day. Well, of the last days, but also just, you know, because we don't know when this is going to happen. We don't know when Christ is going to come. So we really do need to be prepared now.
Well, and you know what? This also makes you question yourself. Mm. Would I have been one of the people sitting there left behind?
That is so funny that you say that. Because in the book, it makes it sound so simple. He says, you either accepted Christ or you didn't. If you accepted Christ, you were raptured. I'm like, okay, well, I've accepted Christ. But it's like, at what level?
That's my only other issue with this book. I have three main issues. We already talked about the main two. The third one, and I like reading Christian literature.
Right.
But this...
business is that what you're going to talk about? That drives me
all
nuts
you
too.
Have to do is
accept
is admit, you know, is say Christ is my savior and he will save me, and that's all you have to do to be saved. There's no repentance process.
I know they There's don't get no, into that.
That's the only thing that really.
But the thing that I struggle with, what I like though, is look at Bruce. He was a minister, or at least he was an assistant minister. He was going to church all the time.
He was in
preaching.
The staff.
He was there. But he is the one that admits he hadn't fully taken it to heart. His faith wasn't as strong. He had not taken it fully to heart. So it makes you look at what kind of LDS person you are. Yes, well, I go to church every week. I go to primary every week. I'm primary president.
But why do you go?
Yeah, why do I go?
Is it habit? Is it because...
Exactly.
Is it simply because you may not be there now, but you have inside you a hope that you will be there someday? Or maybe, and some people I'm sure go for appearance, or because their family expects them to, or
that's why people go on missions. And it's why do you pay your tithing? Do you pay your tithing because you know you're supposed to, or do you pay it with the full purpose of your heart, knowing that this is what I want to do? You know, it's all these little things. I mean, you can really take all of the ideas here and put them towards your life from an LDS perspective and think, okay, how am I living my life as an LDS person? Am I just kind to people on Sunday, or am I living a Christ-like life 7 days of the week instead of 1 day of the week?
Are you doing things resentfully? Like going to church? Like paying your tithing?
Like going visiting teaching?
Teaching your nursery class? I love teaching my nursery class. I don't resent that at all, even though I have been in nursery for over a year. I love it.
See, same thing with me. I love primary. Okay. I've been primary president for 2 years.
I have to admit, there
love
was,
it.
For about 2 minutes, I cried because I wanted, not because I didn't want to be in nursery, because I loved nursery, but because I really wanted to be in Sunday school, because I'm really feeling a need for that teaching in my heart.
But you can do that
I can get that.
Study.
I can do that in personal study, but there's more than that. Like, I'm really wanting to have some...
I understand.
I mean, it's hard to describe.
I know how you feel, Shenda, because for 6 years, I've been married 6 of my 9 years, I've been in nursery.
That's a lot. That's
and
a lot.
Every time I had
time.
A child, I was put back in nursery.
It's a lot of nursery.
And it's,
time.
You do. You, I know exactly how you feel because you feel like you can't get it.
Well, you get to where you want the grown up gospel discussions where you can have that epiphany in your heart and have the confirmation of the Spirit, which you can get when you're reading, but sometimes someone has an insight through inspiration that you need to hear. Or someone in the class shares something, is inspired to share something, and it makes an impression on you. That's what I love about Sunday school.
Well, but you know what? I have to be totally honest.
Well, and you've been in primary for years.
I have been, whether as, you know, the pianist or, well, like I said right now, I'm the primary president, but I absolutely love preparing my sharing time every month. Mm-hmm. I get so much out of my studying, and I love to teach these children and have them look up at me. And when you see that they're really getting these
gospel
principles.
You have such a gift for that.
It's just so wonderful. So I'm gaining so much from it.
My husband and I are just having fun letting the kid, playing with a laser pointer with the kids. And when everything's done, the lesson, snack, activity, all of that's done, and they're kind of sick of the toys, my husband pulls out his laser pointer and puts it on the floor, and they just run around trying to step on it. It's the funniest thing.
You know,
I love it. But we love
those
kids.
Never think that what you're doing does not matter, because when my child was first went into nursery, she learned, "I love to see the temple." Mm-hmm. And that is her favorite primary song to this day. And she came home, we talked about the temples. You know, it's these little things that they pick up when they're 2 and 3, and they start becoming ingrained into their heart, their mind, their soul, I mean, everything.
Well, they're getting that truth confirmed to them when they're young, and they're so close to that veil, and they can get that confirmation so easily.
So I just think, you know, never look at what you're doing in the church as not being important, because every calling is important. There's something that some life you will touch, maybe one person, it may be 100 people.
And it might not even be one of your, it could be your own life.
Exactly. And so you always have to look at everything. Boy, we've really turned this around, haven't we? Yeah. Left behind!
Yes.
But can I just talk a little bit about the writing style in this book?
It is interesting. I like it.
I love the way that Jerry Jenkins writes. I like how he makes his characters very strong, whether they're on the evil side or the good side. You know,
this evil is just as strong.
Yes, it is.
As the good.
The main person, Carpathia, I presume that's how he's pronounced.
That's how I was.
Because of Carpathian Mountains, which he lived by. You know, I just totally lost my train of thought, but I'll try to keep talking here.
Style of writing, how he writes,
yes,
so strong.
Yes, thank you. But he gets so evil. I warn people: do not read these books at night, because sometimes, because I don't want to go to sleep with that on my mind when he has done something like that. So I try to read some of my, I learned that with the Left Behind books. I tried not to read them like at 1 and 2 in the morning, because I didn't want to go to bed feeling the way I was feeling sometimes, even though I was reading Tribulation Force at 1:30 last night. But
are you going back through it again?
I am. Do you think I can read the first one and
not
keep going?
Through it again?
That's insane. When I know this, when I start a series again, even though I've read it before, I know I'm committed. And this will be fun this time, because when I first read through the series, the books were still coming out 1 a year.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it was torture.
Did you buy each of them?
No, I just got them from, put my name on the waiting list at the library. Uh-huh. It was pure torture. It was just pure torture. So this time, I can just have all the books. I can read all 12 of them. It's going to be great.
Yeah, there's sometimes when a series comes out, and I purposefully wait to read it.
I can see why.
So I'm so glad that I didn't know about this series before.
Me too, because this would be impossible with me. I'm addicted, and I can't wait to get home and read. I have
Soul Harvest.
Soul Harvest at home ready and waiting for me.
You know, I just think you learn a lot about human nature. Makes you think about what you would do when you read these books.
Or what it would be like to live through. Because you know these times are not going to, the times that are coming are not going to be easy.
I know.
It might not be exactly like this.
Scary if it will be.
But even thinking about the Constitution hanging by a thread. But I'd never heard the following statement that should have followed that. But the church will, the people of the church of this church will uphold it.
That's funny. If we remain righteous.
Yes.
If there were enough of us that remain righteous.
And no one had ever followed it up with that. But I just thought that was going to be, you know, the end of the world is going to be so horrible. It's going to be tragic. And yet, that reassures me there's going to be people
Hillary's
in the church left.
Hand,
I can see that. I wanted to finish my sentence.
Finish
first.
Your sentence.
Hillary.
Okay. That's why I raised my hand and didn't interrupt you.
So you need little paddles.
Yes, I do.
I was going to say, my husband and I were talking about that 2 nights ago. Mm-hmm. And because I was talking about how, you know, all these books we're reading are kind of end of days, doom day, whatever kind of thing. And he said that same thing. He said, because we were talking about how the economy and it kind of started with the September 11th discussion, which is a whole other ballgame, which, anyway, that's exactly it, that the LDS people will be the ones that uphold that Constitution, and we might be called to bear arms to defend that Constitution.
Which makes it really interesting to me that we could have a potential member of our LDS church as a presidential candidate.
Possibly. Well, we do have that. Mitt Romney could possibly.
He'll be a candidate. I doubt he'll get elected, but he'll be a candidate.
I doubt he'll get elected, but I know he'll be a candidate.
And boy, and frankly, I'm in a heartbeat.
Isn't
him.
He just a nice like a man?
Is that what you felt like?
No.
Is that what George Bush would? Because Al Gore was just a little homely. I'm making a joke. Everybody, I'm joking.
No, it's just interesting. I think, you know, that whole Constitution hanging by a thread thing. You look at
it's
what
getting
things
close.
Have been challenged.
It's getting close.
It has been challenged
so much.
Well,
we talked
so
about
much.
This when we talked about the believer.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
We did.
That goes right along with that. But I would highly recommend anyone and everyone to read this series, even though it's not our doctrine totally down to the T at all, you know? It's
just
not.
As far as a work of literature,
it's
what
so
an interesting concept.
And it's fascinating to see. Yeah, that's what I liked about it, is it's like, oh, this is someone else's take on the Bible. When
right.
I know perfectly, well, not perfectly, but I know well enough to know that this is not
prophesied,
it's not LDS doctrine.
Right.
I enjoyed it. In fact, I loved it.
Yes.
I might even have to put it on my keep on a desert island kind of thing.
Oh, mine is definitely there.
And it would have to be the whole series. I can't
right.
say just Left Behind, because so far I'm up to book 4 and I'm loving every one
yeah.
of them.
Warn you one more time. Yeah. If you get started, you read Left Behind, you cannot stop.
Okay, I have to talk about one more thing.
Okay.
I was cruising along, so excited to read, even though I knew this was, that something wasn't right with, you know, I wasn't sure myself with my knowledge of the last days, et cetera, et cetera. We already had that discussion.
Right.
But when we got to the end, and all of a sudden, 18 months had passed.
Oh,
by.
That bugged me too.
I mean, it just jumped so fast. There was no summary. There was no.
Where did
you know,
Amanda come
over
from?
Over the months, here it comes, and then wham, they're both proposing. And
that bugged
just,
me too.
I was just kind of like,
they're
wait,
guys. They just
what?
Went, oh, no one's gonna care if these guys get
exactly.
together or not. I'm going home.
Isn't
I care
funny?
About
they
Chloe
waited
and
until
Buck.
The last
and...
minute. They knew they were gonna have 18 months apiece. Okay, so
that's
they waited
true.
Until the last minute to propose. Isn't that so much like a guy? Anyway, I'm just
yes.
kidding.
Yes, no, it is just like a guy.
Sorry, Rob,
wait
if you're listening.
The last minute.
Men that we
oh,
know. That
I think he'd be one of the first people to admit what men are like. But
he has
he,
in
he
his
knows
books.
Yes. You know, but I just think it's so interesting that before then, they didn't. I mean, they didn't get engaged before then. They waited until 18 months when they've been saying this whole time, we'll have 18 months apiece, 18 months apiece.
You know what? It took 2 years before my husband and I got to that. We dated
it took
on and
my
off and
I
on and off
month.
And you know.
You
so I can totally
well,
understand
passed too, actually. Mm-hmm. So.
I don't see I'm just going 18 months is faster than 2 years. So.
Yeah. But I mean it's just something that they were that they knew each other and they knew they were going to be at least Buck and Chloe.
I know.
And in 18 but the thing was cool they did it at the same time in rooms right next to each other.
I know.
That
it's
was
cute.
Kind of,
it
that
is
was,
cute.
That was
it
kind
was
of
a
that,
nice little touch.
That cheesy romantic thing that guys can do.
I think overall,
yeah.
though, besides that point, we've got a good
well,
series
I think
here.
The reason
yeah.
why I didn't like it is because I kind of felt disconnected suddenly.
That's
like,
true.
Suddenly
like,
I just
we missed a year and a half of their lives. It's like, you're telling me it was nice, peaceful, and quiet for a year and a half, and nothing happened at all?
Well, and I'm just
you
thinking,
know?
I just totally felt like I was just ripped to a new
That's
session.
True.
And
yeah,
I,
they could have written
I can honestly
written
tell
that
you
them.
That if I stopped reading right now, I would not feel like I was missing anything.
I don't know how you can say that because I mean,
honestly.
After reading the first book, I just could not. Oh,
see, I know where she's coming from. I know where she's coming because we were talking about this the other day. I like the series and I will continue to read
right.
it until it gets
right.
unless it gets too dry for me.
Oh, it will
but
not.
It gets,
believe me.
What
won't.
I don't like, and Shanda and I think we both agreed on this, is just that it gets preachy.
Oh,
and it's like you just get tired
okay.
of hearing him say.
Just
you know
what?
Yeah.
Skim over that part.
I have been.
Do the story.
I have been because it's been driving
to.
Me nuts. Rafe has been annoying
to.
Me. I'm like, I would turn him in too. He's driving me crazy.
You know what? I don't read all of the scripture part word for word, and I just kind of oh, okay, that's nice. I skim and go to the part that
yeah.
I want to read, which is a story
which is why
line.
I'm
going to
read it.
Yeah.
So,
the preachy,
because, but the preachy.
I skim over the preachy parts. It's just that you know, it's and not to put anybody's. Beliefs down is just for me in my heart is hit such a discord with all you have to do is admit a belief in Christ. And then you are saved. And the Baptist type belief, nothing but, you know, all you have to do is believe and you're saved, and no matter what, no matter what, you will be saved.
We know that faith without works is dead. So we know what is entailed. You have to have faith and you have to believe in it, but you also have to prove and work.
And they say that naturally if you have faith, the works will follow. Blah, blah, blah. They but that's not what it shows in their beliefs. No, they don't. It doesn't come out in their doctrine. And that's just, you know, that's just hard for me to align with. So I have to skim over it because it kind of stresses me out.
No, I don't sit here and read it literally word for word. I would not read that, could read that fast if I did. You know, I just, I'm a
fast reader. See, and I'm a word for word reader naturally.
I'm not. I never have been.
I didn't.
That's how come I could read the Da Vinci Code in less than 24 hours.
When I get into it, when I'm reading a book, and I if I can slide into it, and I just get in, I'll read every word. Because I can read it fast.
I
haven't
with this one, because that's just it. I got so involved in it. I was reading every single word.
Mm-hmm. Even ins and thes and as. See, I don't do that anymore.
Everything.
I haven't.
I do. I read the whole thing. I get in the story.
Well, I still get into the story.
I get in the story so deep that I can't stop thinking about it when I'm doing other things.
I'm like
I'll be washing the dishes and I'm just thinking about the story because I'm in it.
Oh, yeah. That's why when they pull you in.
When I find a story that can just pull me in and I like being there, and then it just, like with the Left Behind, you definitely get swept along.
Yes, you do.
Boy, do you.
You are not left behind. You are like, pulled along. Like
with The Believer, man, I got sucked into that
story.
There
was another one. Stephanie Black does an excellent job. But there's been
some where I'm like, I'm definitely skimming.
The Christ Commission was like that. And Persuasion was like that for me.
Well, you can't skim those. Those are ones you have to read because they're so complicated and involved.
Oh, I was skimming Persuasion up and down. Oh, I'm sure. And forwards.
I'm sure. That's why you didn't get the full experience.
I don't want to get that full experience.
Not when you can watch the movie. Watch
there
the movie.
There you go. I would rather watch all those movies.
Okay, so I have a couple of questions then. Okay. We talked about Rayford.
Yes.
His daughter, Chloe.
Yes.
A little bit. Buck Williams.
I love Buck. Buck's my favorite.
Buck is a likable guy.
And we talked about Bruce Barnes a little bit.
Yes.
We didn't talk about Hattie Durham much.
That's okay.
And that's okay. Steve Plank. I thought Steve was He went from being, you know, Buck's
pal. Right-hand man.
Because they were a team. Friend.
Right. Basically. His boss that believed in Buck, and I think it just came back to the point that he was brainwashed by Caucasian.
He was the hardest one to accept the brainwashing from. And what did you feel when he was like, Why weren't you there, Buck? Why weren't you there?
No, think about it. Why was Buck the only one that wasn't? Because he had the spirit with him. He had God with him. The rest of them did not have God with him, and that's how they were able to be brainwashed. That's how Buck was able to explain that whole situation.
Wasn't that so frustrating? I mean, what would you do in Buck's place when you were there?
That's what did
it to me. I was like, what if I was sitting there?
And the whole wondering if Nikolai knows.
That he can read their minds.
He could read their minds. That's what I wondered too.
Because how would he know to tell everyone Buck wasn't there? Because Buck didn't have to make a commitment. He didn't have to repeat anything. He didn't make Buck repeat anything.
He didn't even say anything. Buck said nothing.
You know, he came to Buck and he sent that something. Nikolai did came to Buck and said something and then left.
Okay.
And Buck wasn't expected to say anything back like everybody else.
Don't you think that evil can pinpoint good and detect that there's this, that God's spirit is with him? Do you think that
Nikolai isn't saying anything because he still hopes to win Buck over?
Probably.
Or destroy him. Well, because if you think about it, going further on in the series, there's different little subtleties, like when Rayford can overhear, not to give away too much of the story, but can overhear in the cockpit, that he talks about Buck, and he says something about, how do you put it, just that he's watching him, curious, he likes him enough to keep him close,
right?
But he's kind of like watching him a little bit too, and then with the whole Verna Z thing, what's with her name? What is it with Verna Z?
I don't like that woman.
Oh, you can't help but not like her.
She took over after the...
Yes, and then she's just this horrible woman that...
I thought it was great when the secretary and Buck overheard the conversation.
Oh, I know, that was funny.
Between Bailey and Verna Z. And he goes in there and she's all... he says you need to visit this. Yeah, I know. I thought that was like, funny. Whatever. I heard what he really said. You know, and I thought that was great.
That was funny.
That was good. Okay, so are the voices and actions of the characters believable to you? Do you think this could? I mean, this seems like it could. We already the actions of do any characters' actions trouble you? Well, obviously, Carpathia's actions trouble
us just a little bit.
And Hattie.
Hattie. She's so ditzy.
What about any of the? What about any of the good guys? Any of their actions? Any of them ever strike you?
You know, the most compelling thing that happens at the very beginning of the book is when, you know, when Rayford goes in and he finds his wife's nightgown and wedding ring in the bed. Then he goes and finds his son's pajamas there in the bed. You know, just I thought the way that he described the people finding contact lenses. I thought, what would they find with me? They'd find my wedding ring, my watch, my contact lens,
my earrings.
Yeah, I know. It's just anything worldly. I mean, the way he described that just, and how people responded, and having to go through the grief process.
I think it was interesting that some people would consider it was some kind of nuclear weapon from another
country. I know. I'm like, and it wouldn't disintegrate anything else, just human flesh, but not you standing right next to him.
That's weird.
And then it took all the children. Come on.
I liked that, actually, that he threw that in there. What
would that be like to be giving birth and have your baby disappear?
Oh. That would just be awful.
To be pregnant and then not be pregnant.
That was a little disturbing.
It was.
Okay, so the story is pretty believable. We talked, the characters are believable, the actions.
Yes.
Do you feel changed in any way after reading this book? I mean, I already talked about how it inspired me to read more.
I think to a certain level you do, because it does. It makes you think. You're not sitting there going, oh, okay, and you just accept it. Like you read some books and you just go, okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like this one, you go, like Sheila said,
and it makes you
would I
know
be raptured
your...
right now if I was believing in this particular belief system? Would I be raptured? Mm-hmm. It's like,
Well, if Christ did take his kingdom from the earth, even as we believe the kingdom is, you know, because they don't believe that, they think his kingdom is going to be built in heaven, but we know that his kingdom is being built on earth.
Exactly.
So if he were to take his kingdom from the earth, would we be part of that?
Oh, such a...
It's a hard question. Most people don't want to face it. It's hard. I don't really want to face it, but I know I want. I mean, I want to, but I don't want to. I'm afraid to.
It's a scary prospect wondering where you're at.
Yeah. Well, okay, obviously you are reading it again.
Yes,
I am. Would you read it again?
Oh, yeah.
I think I would read it. Well, I don't know. I can't answer that question until I finish the series. So I'm going to say stay neutral on the would I read it again. I'm going to stay neutral on that. Would it have it in my library again? You know, if I got rid of half my books, would this stay with my half I kept?
That's the problem I have.
I need to read
whole
series.
That's a lot of books to have as half my collection, so I don't know.
If size of library didn't matter, if you only had, if you had storage room for whatever.
I think if you had Belle's library.
Yeah.
And you could only keep half.
I probably would, actually.
Would it be in the half?
Yes, I would.
I think I would.
I would. They are a good read. You'll want to read them.
It'd be right next to Da Vinci Code.
The conclusion to me,
exactly.
The conclusion to how it is, even all the way to the very end, is as important to me as how it starts. So I can't say honestly until I get all the way to the end. So we'll have to see.
All
how
I can
goes.
Say about book 12 is
really okay. I would have to read it just to get to book 12 because I do want to see how they present the end.
I was bawling at the end. Yes.
Well, it's moving, then?
Yes, it is.
Okay, well, it's probably worth it. Okay, we'll keep you updated on the progress. And if anyone else has read this series or is reading this series, let's get a topic going, get really good discussion going on the forum, because we're probably not going to revisit these books as part of the podcast officially. So I want to keep discussing them, so let's start a good discussion on the forum. Okay, let's move on to Copycat briefly.
Very brief.
The copycat, I thought, was the first in this series, and it is not. So we jumped into this book in the middle of a series.
Exactly.
Really know who some of the characters were. Obviously, there was history. Felt like we were missing out on something.
It felt a little empty, and it's because we didn't know who these people were.
It is my fault. That's why we usually start at the beginning of a series, which we tried.
But I did some investigative work on the library's website and found
out.
Good
job, Miss Eugenia.
Yes, thank you. That Betsy Brannan Green, her actual first novel that she ever wrote is Hearts in Hiding.
And that is the first.
And this is the first. And this, she doesn't actually call this one a, you know, a Haggerty mystery novel. But it is included in the Haggerty mystery novels.
Okay.
And like in,
that was my mistake, because I was looking for things on the front.
In my copy of Double Cross that I got for Mother's Day, which is her newest book, it shows all of her books that are written. It says Haggerty mystery novels, and it has all of them listed.
Okay.
And then it has her other books that she's written. Okay. So that's when I got, I looked at that. I have to say, her first book, it's called Hearts in Hiding. It was written in 2001. It is fabulous. That is when we get to really meet the main characters that were part of the characters of Copycat.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. It is an excellent book.
So I think what we're going to do is forego the Copycat discussion.
Definitely.
Let's read Hearts in Hiding.
Yep.
And see what that does without reading the ones in between, unless you want to, for the podcast. Let's read this one and see what it does to Copycat.
Okay.
And see if we can understand a little bit more.
It will.
Maybe we'll end up reading all of them in between, and that would be kind of cool to read an actual series and discuss the whole series as the podcast. So we can actually say the Haggerty Mystery series is what we're discussing. So we might just be able to do that. Like
okay.
I said, next month is Mystery Month. We don't know what books we're reading yet, so...
We'll get back to you on that one.
We'll have to decide and let you know on the website. So check the website to see what
True.
Next month's books are going to be.
There are 7 books in the Haggerty Mystery Novels series.
7 books?
7.
Okay. And this one's about Copycat fits right in the middle, right?
Right. Copycat's is the 5th.
Okay. Well, maybe not right in the middle, but close to the middle.
But Hearts in Hiding, I just have to say, I love the mystery that she weaved. So I think you will love it also.
Okay.
What's funny is even in Copycat, the ending, it's a surprise.
It was?
I would not have thought.
She's good.
That it was going to end the way it was.
She's good. She surprised
me. When we got closer, I started suspicious.
I didn't get suspicious till like the page before they find it. I'm like, wait a minute.
That's funny.
Well, wait a minute.
With the psychiatrist, how he gave Mark the funny look when he said, is that what...
I know.
That one prisoner was? Yeah. I was like, okay, that's foreshadowing right there. So I was a little, starting to pay attention,
I wasn't picking up on that.
I didn't get it completely until right then, but I had a little suspicion that things were going to be
leaning
a certain way.
I'm not clever enough to figure that part out. I was just like, oh, all right, whatever.
So I guess we're going to wait and discuss all that when we get through.
Sounds good.
And we'll just discuss that next time. Does that work for you guys?
No.
Sounds great.
It works for me. Okay, because I really want to read Hearts in Hiding now.
Now I do too.
Before we talk about Copycat, I want to read that.
I read it
it
was a matter of 36 hours, maybe less than that.
Yeah, that's the good thing is it is a quick read.
Okay.
This is good.
So that's what we'll do for that. Now, we're ready for Sheila's children's literature highlight. So whenever you're ready, Sheila, take it away.
I was just thinking, with school starting up, I know ABC tracks of year-round school have already been in for a while, but D-track just started this past week, and traditional starts...
2 weeks.
Week-ish. Okay. So I just thought I would share a few books that talk about first day of school, talk about anxieties of going back to school and going to school for the first time. That might just be fun for you to check out. My absolute favorite that I know a lot of people know is called The Kissing Hand. It's by Audrey Penn. I love this. I like to read this at the beginning of the school year. It was basically written for children who are entering school for the first time. It talks about a child's fear and how this little raccoon is scared to go to school. He says, I want to stay home with you. I want to play with my friends. I mean, we've all probably heard this from our kids. And the mother basically tells Chester that, you'll go make new friends, everything will be okay. But then she tells Chester about a secret. I love this. He says, what kind of secret? A very old secret, said Mrs. Raccoon. I learned it from my mother, and she learned it from hers. It's called the kissing hand. And Chester wants to know what the kissing hand is, and she says, I'll show you. So she opens up his little paw.
Oh,
I know, this is so darling. And she spreads it open, and she kisses Chester right in the middle of his palm. And Chester felt his mother's kiss rush from his hand up his arm and into his heart. Even his silky black mass tingled with a special warmth. Then she explains, she says, now, whenever you feel lonely and need a little loving from home, just press your hand to your cheek and think, Mommy loves you, Mommy loves you. and that very kiss will jump to your face and fill you with toasty warm thoughts. And I thought, how great to share this book, especially with those of you that have kindergartners going for the first time.
That was us 3 weeks ago.
Even though a lot of these kids nowadays go to preschool, I mean, this would be good for beginning of preschool too, but kindergarten's a little bit longer than preschool.
Well, it's every day.
But I love this. Again, it's called The Kissing Hand by Audrey Penn.
You want to know something that was very cute?
What's that?
Jace's teacher read this to her.
Oh, good.
Read this to the class.
Yes.
And then at the end of the reading, because of course, all the moms and dads go in there for the first like half an hour.
Right.
Help them decorate their little person and put it up, so she put it in the boys' section or the girls' section, JC put it up in the girls'. She was the last one done. So much detail. It was insane. Sweetheart, they're reading the book now. Are you almost done? So she went and glued her little girl up in the girls' section and went and sat down, and they read this book to them. And all of the parents are just in the back or sitting in the chairs right near the back watching their little kindergartners on their first day. And then the teacher says, take one of these hearts and give it to your mom or dad.
I love
Give them a kiss and tell them to have a good day. And so they came in with this little red cutout paper heart that I kept. And I was fine. I wasn't sad or anything until we walked home. She gave us that heart, and we gave her a hug and a kiss, and my husband and I were walking home, and I started to cry. You just can't help it. If you have feelings or a heart at all,
yes,
it's
exactly.
going to be touched.
I can't wait to send my last kid to kindergarten.
You say that now.
She's only
not even a year old.
Well, and we know we're probably having one more, so I can't say anything for another 5 years at least. 6 years probably. So
you've got to do that.
I love this book because it made such a warm memory bringing that. Because in one of those pictures where she kisses his palm,
that's right.
It's all red hearts, and
isn't
so for them to hand out the red hearts, that's what
it's perfect.
Special.
It's perfect.
Mm-hmm. That's such a clever idea for the kindergarten teacher,
isn't it? Fun?
It's like it's good for it's reverse psychology for the kids.
You bet it is.
Because they're saying, and they did the same thing with Tana's kindergarten class. Mm-hmm. Your mom and dad, tell them, I know you're probably going to be sad and you're going to be, alone and feel lonely at home, but I'll be coming back soon.
That's great.
So that the kid comforts the mom and it works wonderfully.
Really alleviates a lot of fears. This is a book I like to read to children on the first day of school. It's called It Happens to Everyone. It's by Bernice Myers. It says, Michael is starting school today. He's excited but also nervous. Little does he know that his teacher is very excited and nervous also. And it's really cute because it goes through the whole book showing how he gets up and trying to find something to wear.
That's like me every morning.
But then there's his teacher looking through all of her clothes too. She's not sure what to wear either. And then he's getting ready, feeding his pets. Well, guess what? She's reading or feeding her pet too. And, he spills his milk and gets peanut butter on his sweater. Well, Mrs. Daniels spills her coffee. And then Michael can't find his other sneaker. Well, Mrs. Daniel can't find her glasses. So it's just showing that, all these feelings that you have about coming to school on the first day, teachers are the same way. We're feeling exactly the same. We're nervous. We're excited.
You don't even think about that.
I know. It's very true, though. Even after all these years of teaching, I'm still very nervous on the first day of school. But this is a great book. I like that one. It's called It Happens to Everyone. This one is called First Day Hooray. It's by Nancy
Poydar.
Yeah, Poydar. It has a cute little... This one just goes and just talks about how everyone's getting ready for tomorrow and how they've... You buy your lunchbox or you buy your backpack, and it's cute. I mean, it's not one of my absolute favorites, but she just wonders what's going to happen on the first day and how the school's getting ready and teachers getting ready, and I don't know. It's a cute one. Another one like that is called Mouse's First Day of School. You may have seen some of the other Mouse books by Lauren Thompson. It's cute. I mean, a lot of these just, if you can read these with your kids before they actually go to school, it just kind of gets them ready to what to expect, what they'll see.
It might even start a dialogue between the two of you.
So they can talk about it, what they're worried about. The Berenstain Bears Go to School by Stan and Jan Berenstain. It talks a lot about that, how they're, a lot of the nervous fears that they go through. And, what does it say? Yeah, Sister Bear says, Mama Bear says, Sister and I are going to meet her new teacher tomorrow. This year, sister would be starting kindergarten. She wasn't quite sure how she felt about it.
Yes.
I have to tell you something. I think it's so funny about the Berenstain Bears.
What's that?
How come nobody else is named Uncle Bear, brother, sister Bear, brother? They're like the only ones named Mama, Papa, brother,
I've
and sister.
I've always wondered about that,
but everybody else has a name.
Well, maybe they really do have names. That's just what they call them.
Yeah, because this is the main. This is the main family.
I just think that's funny. That's
I know. It is funny. I've always thought about that, too. But they here they go, and, you know, she takes her to school and lets her look around. You know, I used to love it when I was teaching kindergarten first and second, when I'd be getting my classroom ready, like, the week before that the kids would start coming and want to peek their head in and, hi, you know, and they want to say hi to their new teacher, and I'd love it. I'd let them come in and look around, and that's why I have the open house with preschool, you know, so
you can get used to it.
Yeah, and look, and it. These are just some great books that you can read. I mean, there are so many books like this out there. In fact,
we have The Night Before Kindergarten.
That's a great, great book too.
My sister gave that to Tana before she started
cute.
School.
No, I probably have, like, you know, 5 or 10 more books about first day of school stuff. These are just some I grabbed. Uh-huh. But my favorite, like I said at the beginning, is The Kissing Hand by Audrey Penn. The kids by and far love this one. So go look out there, find some books, get your kids ready to go back.
And now that the summer reading programs are coming to an end.
That's right.
Getting ready for school. So much fun. Our school starts in July, so.
Right, we're year round.
See, we technically don't start till after Labor Day with the charter school.
Wow. That's exciting. New adventure for your kids.
You'll have to let us know how that goes.
I'm excited for them.
It's good.
All this uniform buying, let me just tell you.
Yeah, I'm not sure
great
how I feel about that.
Color choices. The only thing I can offer my children are shoelaces and variety, and that's about it. But you know what? I think it's a good thing.
Yeah. So there's some places where that's really a useful tool.
So. Amen.
Well, thank you for sharing those books
with
us.
You are more than welcome.
Don't forget to go to the library, check those out, and share them with your children who are starting school, whether they're going into kindergarten or even third grade. I know my third grader is still a little nervous about the first day of school.
Yep.
But we've started from the beginning the tradition of Father's Blessings.
We do the same thing.
The day before school.
We
so
do the same thing.
I'm really glad because my daughter asks for them, my oldest daughter asks for them.
I love it.
Even wonderful. Before we can have a chance to give, mm-hmm. you know, for her to get them. She says, we can't forget my father's blessing. So obviously, that's a very good comfort to her, and I'm so mm-hmm. glad that my husband can offer that
Isn't
to her.
Isn't it great?
So.
Yeah, I receive a blessing before the new school year starts for me every year,
too.
That's
great. That's great.
So it's a teacher.
I think as moms, we probably deserve that, too, because we're getting the kids ready in the mornings. We're helping with homework. We're going to pick up. We're doing school activities. We probably deserve a blessing as well.
Right. Well, I have it for both things because I'm still teaching. And
well, exactly. I mean, not just as, not
but
just
as a mom, too.
As
I mean,
a teacher.
He mentions both that I'll have enough time to do everything. And
mm-hmm. Well, the teachers
balance.
Definitely deserve that. But I don't think as moms we think about that.
But they should. I think you deserve a blessing.
Yeah, well, I always think of a blessing last for some reason. I always try everything else first and then I go, oh, yeah, a blessing. And yeah, I need to not, I need to bring it up in the priority list.
Right.
Anyway, thank you for sharing those with us. And thank you for joining us for segment 2 of episode 7 of the LDS Women's Book Review. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast, this segment, and this episode. We will let you know about the books that we've chosen for next month on the website. You can also see who won the autographed copy of The Believer by Stephanie Black on the webpage as well. So check it out at www.